This is Project Management Paradise. Project Management Paradise is brought to you by Cora Systems, a worldwide leader in providing enterprise project and portfolio management solutions to global agencies such as Honeywell, Boston Scientific, PwC, and the UK's National Health Service.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Project Management Paradise podcast. I'm your host, Aaron Murphy, and today I'm joined by Lorraine Kwai to discuss the topic of mental toughness for leaders. Lorraine was an undercover and counterintelligence agent for the FBI for 24 years. As an FBI agent, she developed the mental toughness to survive in environments of risk, uncertainty, and deception. Since retiring from the FBI, Lorraine speaks and consults on how to develop mental toughness, breaking through self-limiting barriers and overcoming obstacles by drawing on her experiences and practices from her time in the FBI. She is also the author of Mental Toughness for Women Leaders, 52 Tips to Recognize and Utilize Your Greatest Strengths, and Secrets of a Strong Mind. Lorraine, thank you so much for being on the podcast. How are you today?
I am doing well, Aaron, and thank you so much for inviting me.
No, thank you very much for being on the podcast. Lorraine, I have to say, you have possibly one of the most interesting backgrounds I've ever had the opportunity of reading up on. Could you tell us a bit about yourself and your background, how you became an FBI agent?
Oh, absolutely, Aaron. I was born and raised on a rather remote cattle ranch in the middle of Wyoming. And, I loved it. It was great. But when I knew there was something more for me than just being on this cattle ranch. So when I graduated from high school and went to college, I decided to go to Arizona because it was just getting away from home. I needed something bigger because I just knew my wings needed to spread, right? So I was there and I got a job at a department store, and it was a management trainee, and then I was a department manager, and I was on my way to becoming a buyer, and it was a nice fast track, but I had to just sit there and think to myself about what this job was doing to me. Was it really fulfilling? Was it sucking the soul from me? And that's what I felt. It just wasn't allowing me to be who I felt I was created to be. So I went back to school at Arizona State, and I was there. The FBI came on campus and they interviewed me. And I think they really liked the fact that I grew up on a cattle ranch because I wasn't spoiled. I was a little spunky. I wasn't afraid to get, my hands into it, roll up my shirt sleeves and really work at it. So they hired me, and I was 25 years old. The average age of an agent going in is about 33. So I was a little young, a little wet behind the ears. I know firsthand how hard it is to put a shine on a sneaker, because that's sort of who I was. So that's how I fell into the job.
That's amazing. You came from a background where you were ready to roll up your sleeves and get into the work. So that really did stand by you, especially in the interview process of the job. And I can only imagine the type of situations that you encountered when you were working there. And to develop mental toughness must have really been something like a muscle that you had to use, because really, we're never really born with mental toughness. Was this something that you had to practice over time, or did it come naturally to you?
It was something I had to practice over time, although my background had prepared me. I mean, when I was about 8 years old, I had to face a charging bull. So I thought, oh my gosh, going into the FBI will be not exactly child's play, but I should be able to handle it pretty well. I have to admit, mental toughness is not something you're born with. It's something you develop, and it has to be consciously developed. It's not just something that happens to us. When we think about mental toughness, a lot of people would define it as plowing through adversity or attacking a problem. And that might work in football or in snowdrifts, but it's not going to work in life or business. And so often what we read about mental toughness and strong minds comes from athletes and coaches, and that's fine. But for the average person, we're not going to have to go out onto a football field. We don't have to worry, about tacking a linebacker down the field. So what I try to do, both through my online training program and my book, both called Secrets of a Strong Mind, is share actionable ways that the average person can develop a strong mind. And one thing I will say about being in the FBI, while theories are nice, evidence is better. So all of my work is really based in psychology and neuroscience. So I try to provide my viewers and my readers with practical, proven tips.
Fantastic. And would you be able to give an example of some of these tips on how to develop the mental toughness that's needed?
Absolutely. And, you know, it comes down to resilience and having the grit to persevere. And I will say that when I was in the FBI Academy on my very first day, we all stood up and talked about how, you know, where we came from. And one guy was a Marine and another was a lawyer and another was a trooper that had survived a shootout. And then I stood and said I was a buyer at a fancy department store. And everyone just kind of turned to get a look at the fluff ball that had accidentally gotten into the FBI. But when I talk about mental toughness, it's knowing how to approach problems that you and I are going to face every day. For me, on that first day in the academy, we suited up for in our fit test, and I got out there and I was supposed to do 50 push-ups, and I couldn't do them. I just didn't have the strength to do it. You know, I could throw bales of hay around, but I didn't know, I just couldn't push out those push-ups. And so I stood the very real possibility of being washed out of the academy from the get-go. So I did need mental toughness. I needed grit. I needed perseverance. And I had to really dig down and to discover what was important to me. And I knew I couldn't be mentally tough unless my heart was in it. And that's the thing. A lot of people, I think, miss that part, is that your heart has to be in it. So when I started looking at why I wanted to be in the FBI, I learned internally that FBI stands for fidelity, bravery, and integrity. That's internally. And when I thought about that, I realized those were values I could really get behind. They meant something to me. And I had lived by those kinds of values on that ranch in Wyoming. So when I was able to kind of understand and see and put myself in that place, it gave me the will. It gave me the grit. Because I'll say, if you don't have skin in the game, if it's not important to you, when things get tough, you might just give up, move on to something easier. And that's where most of us stay, at a mediocrity that kind of comes with success. Success because we haven't really pushed ourselves. We haven't really dug down deep enough to uncover what really is important to us. That gives us the will and the grit and the mental strength to move forward.
That's fantastic. And I suppose you nearly have to seek the discomfort to truly grow. And this seems like something that you did when you were in the training phase. Like, you didn't give up from not being able to do the push-ups. And by the way, I probably wouldn't be able to do that either. And it's just great that you were able to draw on this resilience as well to keep going. And could you maybe define what this resilience was to you?
Absolutely. It is the ability to manage our emotions and our thoughts and our behavior in ways that set us up for success. And I've done a lot of research. And again, like I said, I base my work in neuroscience and psychology because I don't want to give a lot of self-help books are theories. And they're theories by people who may or may not know what they're talking about. So I like to go back to the source. I like to look at the science. And so science, I will backtrack just a moment. The U.S. Army put together a resilience program to help their soldiers coming back from Iraq and, you know, different places around the world. And so they came up with this program. They brought psychologists and neuroscientists together to help them put together a program that would help their soldiers. And there's some basic components that almost anybody who talks about resilience will hit on. And one is that one we just talked about, values. This job has got to be important to you personally, or you'll find yourself in mediocrity or giving up. And this, one of the other things is having a support system. It can be family or not, but it's people that are around you that share the same values and that support you in what you're doing. That's so, so critical. Having that mission that's important to you. And the other thing that is important is they added a spiritual component, not a religious component, but a spiritual component, because that gives you hope. That gives you future. That puts your mind in some place other than yourself. You're actually, you know, you're no longer your own God. And once you kind of give up that responsibility, it's amazing then what can come out, and you can become more honest about your feelings and who you are and what frightens you and what gives you life.
Learn how to manage a crisis by accessing a complimentary copy at chorusystems.com/crisis guide.
Wow, that's an amazing answer. You've touched on values a few times there. How important are values to someone, especially on this topic of mental toughness?
They're essential. They're just essential. I think we all know people who come out of school, out of college, or wherever training they have, and they're ready to go. They're hungry. And so they get into this corporate ladder, this, you know, their career, and, you know, they're nipping at those folks ahead of them because they're full of ambition and dreams. And so they kind of run over that, you know, the older folks that are flagging behind, and they get to where they want to go, and they follow, you know, they build their own life. You know, they get married, they have children, they buy a house, all the things that the world tells them that will bring happiness, right, and fulfillment. But, you know, give them a few years and they start to age, and sometimes they grow up. But I will say, age and wisdom do not always travel in pairs. Sometimes age shows up all by itself. But if we're lucky, we kind of get to the point where we look around and ask ourselves, is this really where I want to be? And then suddenly they look behind them and there's this new class of, you know, hungry people right out of school, full of ambition and hunger. And pretty soon they're the ones looking over the back of, you know, over their back to see, you know, where they're going to be in the food chain. And they keep that race up they can keep it up for the rest of their lives. But most of us at some point ask ourselves, why am I doing this? Why am I on this treadmill that, and where is it leading? And for some people, that's exactly where they want to be. But for a lot of others, it's where they stopped. They stopped at success, whether or not it brought them fulfillment or not. And those are the ones that suffer or go through like midlife crisis. They reevaluate where they are in life because it's not what really feeds them. It's not. And this is a perfect time for people to really ask, you know, what are my values? So many people know what is valuable, but they don't know what values are. And they're too, a new car is not a value. It's valuable, but it's not a value. And so is a new house or an expensive vacation. Those things are not bad, but they're valuable, but they're not values. And so I just encourage people to always dig down to uncover those things that come from within. You know, they're bad values, and we're surrounded by bad values. And those are the things that are around us that we can't control. I mean, our genetic makeup, the weather, the stock market. There's so many things we can't control. There's so many things we look outside of ourselves to give us value and meaning. Good values are those things that come from within. I mean, it's humility, it's compassion, it's self-respect, it's honesty. It's all these things that come from within that can't be taken from us. Those are values.
So would you say these are the things that are that would drive people to succeed, to strive for greatness, really? It's their core values, essentially, in the name.
Exactly. Because at some point, most of us healthy, mentally healthy people are going to ask ourselves, what gives my life meaning? Where does the joy and contentment come from? And if it's just about collecting toys or things, I mean, that's where you see bitter old people, because they're still looking to collect. And at some point, it's like, it's not fulfilling. It doesn't bring you joy and contentment and a deep sense of fulfillment. And if you want to be mentally strong to get you through the hard times, now, you may not have to have mental toughness or have a strong mind to get through good times. I mean, really. But if you're hitting adversity, and that we're kind of surrounded by adversity right now in this world, if things are not perfect for you and you're going through some tough times, then that is what will actually prompt you and prod you to kind of go deeper, to understand what it is. What am I really willing to suffer pain for? I mean, I'll go through the struggle. It was hard for me to get through that FBI Academy. And there was a lot of pain involved in that, physical and mental. But I was willing to do it because it meant something to me. If something doesn't mean anything to you, you're probably going to just give up and move on to something easier.
Exactly. And I suppose the giving up is the easy option, whereas you want to work towards this goal, that the resilience there, you know that you can achieve this and you have to push yourself. And it's your mind is telling you, you've got this, just keep going, just keep pushing forward, just keep moving. So that's fantastic. And it really does tie in with business leaders today, with companies, and they need that type of motivation really in their day-to-day activities. So would you say how they respond to failure and all these activities, how would you go about responding to this?
Oh, failure is never fun. I don't care who you are or how successful you are, but when you fail, it's just never fun. But what so many of us do is we're so busy trying to be happy and have everything be just perfect for us that when we deal with we don't know how to deal with failure. I mean, we just don't know. But I will tell you this, the way we deal with failure will tell us how we'll achieve success, because true success doesn't come without some of those hard knocks. And, you know, pain, life is hard. Pain is inevitable. Growth, now that's optional. We have the time to really grow from our failures if we will give ourselves permission to do so. So that means looking at a failure. And so many times, like, oh, just, you know, move on. We, you know, you don't dwell on anything that's bad or negative. And we've become so encrusted in this philosophy and way of looking at things that if it's not good, it doesn't bring me happiness and make me feel good all the time, whether it's my job or my marriage or whatever, your friendships, then we move on. And sometimes we do need to move on. I'm not saying that. But if it's important to us, we'll put in the struggle to stick with it. Failures are an amazing door. And I hate failure as much as anybody. But they're an amazing way to understand how our mind works when we're under pressure, or how we respond. We want to respond rather than react. We want to know we can land on our feet when confronted with the unknown. But guess what? The only way to learn that is to jump in with both feet into the unknown. So your chances of failure may or may not be great or small, but it's there. And I always encourage people to have what I call a petri dish. And that is this group of experiences that are untested. They're experiments, really, where you don't know. I mean, for me, it would be singing lessons. I was actually asked to leave my choir in high school. So I know I have a growing edge there. I know I could get up there and start to sing and just people would cringe. I mean, I know that. So, my point is this. A petri dish allows you to fail in a safe environment, because what you really do want to know is how you will respond to a failure or to a confrontation. You don't want to be caught off guard. You want to know. So you have to be out there ahead of it. And so that means putting yourself in a place where that might happen. But petri dishes are safe places.
That's a really, really good way to look at it. And would you say that leaders should be always open to this idea of failure? And is it something that they should grow comfortable with? Or how would you go about that?
Absolutely. And, you know, Warren Bennis had a great quote, and I'm going to mess it up, but it's something along the lines of most leaders don't understand the steel in their soul until they have experienced failure. And failure is what brings out that steel, because it's that point, it's that pivotal point. Am I going to continue? Am I going to work through this? Or am I going to give up and just let somebody else take the blame or point fingers or whatever? But a true leader is going to be able to take responsibility and not only for themselves, but for their team. And I think this is the one of the best ways a true leader can just blossom. And that is by helping their team members understand that failure is not necessarily a bad thing. Look at scientists. They come up with experiments all the time for the purpose of failure. They want to know what doesn't work. They don't look at it as failure. They look at it as an iteration that didn't work. And that attitude allows them to go, okay, let's take what we did learn from this. And that's the key. What did I learn from this failure or this situation that didn't turn out? And how can I tweak it so it will work? Or do I need to just start something new? That is the true nature of a scientist and experiments. And so that mindset serves leaders well as well, and to help their team members understand that.
Amazing. And to draw on back to the mental toughness, is there a difference between mental toughness in men and women?
I would say not. Now, there's a lot of popular literature out there, and there are a lot of theories and a lot of therapists, and nothing against them, but they'll say, oh, you know, in my experience, I have seen this. And they'll use light science to back them up that women think differently than men. But when you get into the true science of it, there's really very little difference between the brains of men and women. Mm. Now, there's a lot of the difference that we see exhibited comes from nurture rather than nature. And a lot of times boys are just raised differently than girls. And so there is this sort of understanding that women are given permission to be more emotional, for example, or that women can multitask, for example. There is nothing in science that confirms that women can multitask more than men. That brains are equal in it. The brains have to switch between tasks. You can't multitask. And the only science that I've been able to find is that women are able to switch between tasks a wee bit faster. But that is basically it. So I'm going to say no, regardless of what the popular literature would say. And it sells a lot of books. You know, I mean, you know, men are from Mars, women are from Venus. And so there is some credibility in that. But as far as the way the brain actually works, I'm going to say no.
It's all marketing tactics, isn't it, at the end of the day?
Yes, it is.
And in terms of mental toughness, can you explain why self-awareness is important?
Oh, my goodness. Yes. I mean, unless you are willing to dig deep to understand, you know, when we look at ourselves, self-awareness means we have to be comfortable with the good, the bad, and the ugly, because that makes up all of us. I mean, and we don't want to look at our shadow side, and for good reason. Who wants to look at, what our issues are? But you can't address your issues unless you know what they are. So I have found some of the best growth opportunities for me have been to look at myself and try to understand why I reacted the way I did in a particular situation, whether it's with people. Sometimes people are the button, or particular events or situations we're put into. And so you can blow it. That's fine. I mean, it's uncomfortable. But the key, I mean, you're not going to learn anything from that unless you look inside and try to understand for yourself, why did I react like that? I have reacted totally inappropriately a couple of times when I felt somehow threatened, my credibility was threatened, or my knowledge was being challenged. I'm going, I get defensive. I mean, that's just natural, right? It's natural. But the real learning thing there is go back, understand, well, what was it that really triggered it? So was it a lack of confidence in myself? Was it something that had to go all the way back to childhood to really uncover? It's like, oh, you know, I heard that from my parents again and again and again. And now you just said the same thing to me in this meeting. And, you know, or to understand why we react rather than respond. And that allows our thinking brain to get involved in it, you know, rather than just our emotional little limbic brain system, which can really take control and sabotage us when we really need to move forward.
Amazing. That's fantastic. And from your experience consulting over the last few years, do you find that many leaders are self-aware, especially for mental toughness, or even in general, are they aware of everything that's happening with them? Or is there ways for them to actually become more self-aware of the situations around them?
Yeah, you know, people are people. And I really don't think it makes any difference whether you're a CEO or, you know, you're an hourly at a grocery store. There's a guy in my grocery store who's just I try to get in his lane because he's always so positive. He's always asking about things or making comments. And he's his joy. He has joy when he comes to work in his, you know, he finds a lot of value and meaning from what he does. And so, it doesn't matter where you are on that food chain. It's important. There are a lot of tools out there now that will help you if you're interested in digging deeper. And I know in my book, I try to do this a lot. I always provide exercises to help people dig down. And it's up to you. You can dig down as much as you want. A lot of you go back to childhood or your upbringing or just experiences as an adult that just kind of confirmed maybe whatever emotions or feelings of ineptitude you might have felt in a younger year kind of bubbles up. And until we can really uncover what caused that to begin with, then every time it bubbles up, you're still going to be reacting rather than taking a careful look at how to respond.
And would you say having a positive attitude, positive thinking, does that really work or go hand in hand with mental toughness?
Oh, it's essential. It's one of the components of mental toughness. And you can't be resilient without being positive. And it's difficult. And in my world, we call it hunt the good stuff, because our brains are wired to be negative. That's just how we show up in the world. And the reason is, you'd think illogical, but it's very logical, because our brain is keeping us safe. And it doesn't know whether something from the left field is a threat to our safety or just a threat to our ego. It doesn't know. All it knows is it needs to keep you safe. And so it's like negative information is like Velcro. It just sticks. Positive information is like Teflon. It's nice to have, but it slides away easily when more negative information shows up. So you have to be very intentional. Very intentional if you want to remain positive. And science has shown us that we need about 5 positive thoughts to counter each 1 negative thought. I mean, that's a lot, particularly in your fast moving situation. You don't have time to think about what you can do in that moment is come up with as many positive thoughts as you possibly can in whatever period of time you have. And it just gets the logic, it turns the brain around enough to where it can see that, oh yeah, you know what, this isn't a threat, because I can see there are ways I can survive this. It's not a threat to my safety. And it allows you then to formulate a way to move forward. So it's essential. Otherwise, you'll be in this negative downward spiral, and that can just lead to burnout, depression, I mean, you name it. And the upward emotional spiral that comes from positive thinking leads to hope, and it leads to, just good, feel good emotions that will keep you moving forward and upward.
Power of positivity. It can't be it.
It can't. I mean, was it Norman Vincent Peale, I think, wrote The Power of Positive Thinking. It's as true now as it was then, maybe even more so, because we now have more science behind it. He sort of innately knew. Now we have neuroscience backing up what he said.
That's fantastic, Lorrae. I've really enjoyed this podcast interview. We've touched on so much. I'm so grateful for your time. And the last question I have for you, if
Yes.
anyone would like to reach out to you to learn more about mental toughness, even to get your books, where would be the best place to reach you?
Thank you so much for that question. LeRaeKwai.com is my blog, my website. And there I put out blogs and I do a lot of writing. And I would love to have you come visit. I have a free mental toughness assessment. And this has been validated by the clinical psychology department at Arizona State University. So it's not just LeRae pulling out a bunch of questions. We validated this, and it's very accurate, and it will tell you in different areas, whether it's emotional or in the way you think or your behavior, it'll tell you, give you a very good score and tell you why that score is what it is. So I would encourage folks, it's free. So there's no problem there. And you can get my book. It's called Secrets of a Strong Mind at Amazon. So I would appreciate that if you want to stop in. And a lot of the things we've talked about today are there, along with exercises and ways that you can become and develop more self-awareness. And finally, I have an online training program called Secrets of a Strong Mind as well. And that can be found on my website.
That's fantastic. I'll make sure that it's all linked in our show notes, Lorraine.
Oh, and I'd love to see people on LinkedIn as well. I'm on LinkedIn. So if we can connect on LinkedIn, that would be great.
Absolutely. That'll be in the show notes. And I know straight after this podcast, I'll be doing that assessment on your website. So I'd like to thank
Sounds
you.
Sounds great, Aaron.
Perfect. Thank you for your time today. And once again, it was a really, really interesting podcast.
Thank you so much. You take care.